Well, hello and welcome. I'm, as always, so happy to be here with you. I was just thinking a couple of minutes ago that it seems like we don't have satsang often enough. Sometimes I feel like I miss being in satsang with you so much that I would like to do it every day, if only that were possible. But it's not. But I am really happy to be here with you. Really happy to see you all here with me. I think it seems that I have, from time to time, bemoaned the fact that I only talk about one thing, that I have so little to say and so little to talk about. I received a message this morning from a dear friend who assured me that the only thing worth talking about is what we talk about, which is self-inquiry, which is to say the repeated and continuing practice of having the experience of the reality of what we are. But still, it seems like there are an awful lot of other very powerful spiritual concepts and ideas and utterances and practices and so forth that, sure to God, have captured the attention of most of us at one time or another. Philosophies and explanations, descriptions, mantras, meditations. But I don't talk about any of that. I don't talk about the sweetness of enlightenment. I don't talk about eternal love. Love, that's a big one. It seems like it is almost a requirement of spiritual people to speak about love and the primacy of love and the ever-presentness of love, the beauty of it, as if it were something that we could do or get rid of or fail to do or fail to get and want. The reason I don't speak about these things has very little to do with any judgment that I might have about their value or their usefulness or their, well, maybe about their usefulness, but not about their value or their beauty or their, the authenticity of the expression that goes into them. The reason that I don't speak about these things and pretty much stick to speaking about the practical practice of self-inquiry, of looking at reality, of looking at myself, has mostly to do with my own experience with these things. I am a sucker for beautiful expression. I am a sucker for emotionally cathartic experience. I'm a sucker for love stories. I'm a sucker for stories with happy endings, and I am a sucker for stories about enlightenment and the vastness of being and the eternity of love. I spent the first year after first meeting my teacher, I spent the first year immersed in those expressions, immersed in the writings and the utterances and the opinions and the poetry of spiritual beings. I read Upanishads and sutras and a lot of Buddhist stuff, Dzogchen stuff. I read Rumi. I read Yoga Vasistha. I read it all, everything I could get my hands on. I thought about nothing else in the in this year of what seemed to be my elevation into heaven. I thought about nothing else. I didn't give a thought to self-inquiry. I knew, after all, already what I was. I was infinite, eternal, shining, empty consciousness, love without end, love without condition, freedom without condition. I knew all of that, so it seemed that I had bypassed the need for the practical work of looking to see what I really am. And I thought about nothing else. I wept I just wept at the beauty of it all, at the inexpressible longing that sought to express itself in all of this spiritual speech and writing and poetry and song and ideas, philosophies. But finally I came to see that these things, all of these things, spring from really one simple insight. All of these spring from the same fountain, the same heart. All of these expressions, whether they are religious expressions of Christian ecstasy or Judaism or Islam, religious expressions, and religion, of course, is the last refuge of the one who is determined to stay bound. And all of the more authentic or the simpler spiritual expressions, the expressions that arose out of the great fountain of spiritual insight that is India, all of the writings and the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Advaita Veda writings and all of it. So beautiful, so complicated, so sweet. And all of it has at its heart the same insight. The same insight that's at the heart of religious expression, the same insight that's at the heart of all spiritual practice, of all spiritual understanding, of all spiritual work and utterance whatsoever. Like insight, that understanding came to me after I had been booted from heaven and could find no solace or satisfaction or enjoyment even anymore in all of the spiritual writings, after they had come to seem to mock me and my previous high state. This understanding came to me in the desperate need to be rid of the longing, the yearning, the heartache that is the effect of all of these spiritual writings and spiritual understandings on those of us who want so badly to be free, who want so badly to have what the Buddha had, to have what Ramana had, to have what Papaji or any of the other great teachers had. These utterances and writings and ideas and concepts, what they do, and it is not to be dismissed, but what they do primarily is inflame in us this yearning. They reach into our heart and fan the flames of this yearning to know the truth, to actually have what seems to be being described or presented in all of the spiritual utterance. And that's not such a bad thing, because that yearning is the engine, the energy that, in the end, drives the inquiry itself, that drives us home to the simplicity and the practicality and the truth of the matter. But I'm afraid that for many of us, and perhaps for me, had I not been very lucky indeed, but for many of us, we tend to get stuck in that realm of spiritual yearning, and we even speak of it, we even sing songs about it, we even write poetry about it, as if the yearning itself was what we yearned for. And and I'm speaking from my own experience here. I'm not projecting this on you. But I know from my own experience that once that yearning was present, that it seemed to me that it was the yearning that was more important than what it yearned for, than what it seeked to find to satisfaction. So I stayed in the books, and I stayed in the thoughts, and I stayed in heaven as long as I could, until I was booted out and had to find my way differently than that. And I found Ramana. And I found Ramana's offering, the simple radical offering of self-inquiry, which I was able to hear be this simple practical advice to disregard all of that. Disregard the yearning. Disregard the resistance to the yearning. Disregard everything whatsoever that constitutes my life, my mind, my consciousness. Disregard all of it just every once in a while, or really as often as I can, look and see what I am. The rest of it is all, at best, an incitement to seeing what's real, to seeing what's true. Because it is my experience that all the most beautiful scriptures, the most beautiful sutras and shastras, the most beautiful poetry, the most beautiful songs and hymns and mantras, all the most beautiful religious experience and utterance and liturgies and dogma all arise from the same simple insight. The same simple insight, which is this: we are not what we believe ourselves to be. And that's the heart of the problem. We are not what we believe ourselves to be, and there is no problem apart from that. We are not what we believe ourselves to be, and what we believe ourselves to be is the totality of our lives, the totality of our personal consciousness, the totality of our spiritual person, the totality of our material person, the totality of our yearnings and aversions and desires and hatreds, the totality of our understanding and our confusion, of our memory, of our expectations for the future, of our falling asleep at night. The totality of our lives is what we falsely believe ourselves to be. All of it. We are not what we believe ourselves to be, and since what we believe ourselves to be is our life itself, nothing whatsoever that we can do within the apparatus of our life can hope to free us of that false belief. No amount of meditation. Meditation's okay. It can be helpful and useful. No amount of therapy. Therapy's okay. it can be helpful and useful. No amount of yearning, no amount of spiritual understanding, no amount of teaching, nothing whatsoever that we do within our mind can be of any use to us in freeing ourselves of the false belief that we are our mind, our life. We are not what we believe ourselves to be, and the only way to rid ourselves of this false belief is with the truth, which is outside of, prior to, concurrent with, vaster than, the life that we believe ourselves to be. And this is what I received as the self-inquiry of Ramana. This simple, practical determination to see the truth. Not to fix my life. Not to make myself an enlightened person. Not to make myself loving or pure or considerate or kind or any of that. Not to rid myself of bad desires. Not to rid myself of stupidity and ignorance. None of that. But just to see the truth for no reason other than to see the truth. And the reason that this is pretty much all that I speak of is because this is what all of my adventures in the spiritual realm finally brought me to and brought an end to the weight, the burden of this idea that I am this life, that all that I am is this life, that I am at stake here. Rid me of this false belief, this false conviction, certainty, that I am this mind, this consciousness, this body, that rid me of the endless undercurrent of fear and anxiety that is the natural product of the conviction that I am at stake in this life. They rid me of my alienation from this life. Now this self-inquiry that I speak of, that is what I heard Ramana say, what I heard what Ramana was pointing to and all of the things of Ramana that I read, this self-inquiry that I speak of is not a spiritual activity. It's not a spiritual endeavor. It is the end of spiritual activity, the end of the spiritual aspiration, which is doomed to fail. This simple self-inquiry that I speak of is practical and real and easy. It's not hard like the search for enlightenment is. It's not complicated like the desire to gain understanding of reality is. It's easy and simple. In fact, it's already present. You see, what I see to be self-inquiry, this simple practice, is just this. I know that I am here. I always know that I am here. I can check and see whether I know this all the time. There's not an activity that I can be engaged in that can prevent me from taking a moment to check and see whether I am here. And I am, always. I am not here because the body is here, or the consciousness is here, or my personality is here. I am here prior to that, simpler than that, more pervasive than that. Once I turn my attention to look for what I am, I find that the knowing of what I am has always filled my consciousness. In fact, it is the fabric, the substance, it is that of which my personal consciousness is made of. That was bad English. Anyone. It doesn't take, it may be that spiritual understanding and spiritual aspiration and spiritual desire and so forth bring us finally to self-inquiry, but it doesn't require any of that. Anybody, upon hearing of the possibility that they are not what they think they are, and that it is easy and simple and direct and infallible to look for what they are, anybody can do this and be free of this lie that they are their life, their personality, their history, their future. And although it is the case that mostly I speak with people who are familiar with spiritual aspiration, I would like to speak with everybody in the world. I'd like to speak with everybody in the world and just present to them this possibility that they are not what they believe themselves to be, and that it is easy for them to rid themselves of that belief without regard to what the outcome is, without regard to whether the outcome is good or bad, that it's easy for them to rid themselves of that belief by just stopping for 1 second and look to see if they are not here, if they are not absolutely certain of their presence. Because that's the game that is the subject of all of the hunt, of all of the life, be it spiritual or otherwise. This taste, this immediate taste of reality, of certainty, of permanence, because you're never absent. Now, the actual outcome of this, as it happens, and it's our great good luck that this should be so, because we could seek the reality of what we are and find we are just pieces of meat. But the actual outcome of this investigation into what I really am is quite wondrous. The continuous, repeated turning of attention to the reality of being, to the certainty of being, gradually, the gradualness of it varies according to the predispositions of the individual personality that's attempting it, but gradually eats away, dissolves, the lie that I am my life. It does not produce within my life some new, vast, great understanding of things. It does not produce within my life the clarity and universal consciousness and so forth, enlightenment and all of that, but it destroys the belief. And in the absence of the belief that this life is me, all fear and anxiety cease. All sense that I am at stake in the outcome of this life ends. The ending of this may be almost unnoticeable at first, but it ends. And things get easy and quiet. And the relationship with the life changes. Instead of it being a relationship of holding the life at arm's length to make sure that nothing goes wrong, to make sure that I can keep a sharp eye on what I'm thinking and wanting and what actions I'm taking, it becomes possible to just relax totally into the life, to enjoy it as it is. This is the natural state that Ramana speaks of. So I don't speak about all that spiritual stuff because mostly what it turns out to be is a bait and switch operation. It's a bait in that it makes us want it so bad, this enlightenment business, this realization business. And it never, ever fulfills that yearning. The switch is, when we're lucky, the switch is to come to see that what we've always wanted, when we were seeking fame and wealth and love and all of that, when we were seeking enlightenment and realization and infinite eternal consciousness, what we have always wanted is to know the truth of what we are. And the truth of what we are is ever-present, unavoidable, inescapable, unmistakable. So that's what I talk about. I talk about self-inquiry, which is looking at myself. I talk about self-inquiry, which is looking at reality, and about its effect, which is ridding myself of the lie that I am this life. So, I guess that's all I have to say, as usual. I seem always to come back to the same point. I want to be helpful. I really want to be helpful. I want to be of use to the people who listen to me and hear what I have to offer. Firstly, I want to be of use by communicating to you, not some spiritual transmission, but by communicating to you the actuality of the simple, infallible method of looking at reality and what the purpose of it is. I want to be of use by communicating it to you in a way in which it incites you to try it. And there's no reason not to try it. I mean, you can't lose anything, except maybe everything. But you can't lose anything. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't require you to go into trance states or take drugs or surrender to any god or anything at all, or to give up your surrender to anything, or to give up your drugs. So I want to be of use by inciting you to try it, everybody that I can speak to try it, just to see. You know, check it out, just to see. In your spare time, as a hobby. And those that do try it, in the course of the what can seem to be a great effort to, God knows what, you know, different people find the effort to be in different realms, in different places, but to be helpful to those who are trying it, to help nudge them in the right direction, to help show what it is that really is being looked for and where it can be found, or more directly, where it cannot be found. So that's what I'm here for. And I guess I don't have anything more to say. I'd be happy to speak with you. Let Carla know that you want to speak, and maybe we can talk together. Thank you for putting up with me for all this time.
Sorry for that. We have Anuhira. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. She's calling from New Zealand.
Oh, hi, John. Thanks. Hi. Great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Now, I have to... It's amazing to speak with you in real time. It's kind of hard to get after listening to a lot of podcasts and things that this is you now.
Yeah, well, anyway. Here I am.
That's great. John, what I wanted to talk about was that there used to be a real sense of urgency, you know, oh my God, I've got to wake up and it's got to happen soon, I've got to do everything for it. And then when listening to you and you saying, you know, you're already awake, that's got no legs to stand on anymore, the thing about urgency. And but then I sort of, the worry comes in that, oh my God, does that mean I get complacent about it all, you know. But what does seem to happen is that, like you say, just whenever it occurs to you, I guess the worry comes again, oh God, you know, it's not going to occur to me enough, but it does keep occurring to look. And, yeah, so I guess my question is, you know, is there some, should I still have that urgency about it all somehow?
Well, evidently not if you don't have it. I don't think there's any particular virtue in a sense of urgency, since it is really true, as you can see yourself, that you are in need of nothing. The only thing that continues to cause this worry that perhaps you're going to become complacent is it arises directly from the belief that you are your life. If you are not your life, then of what consequence is it whether you do self-inquiry or do not self-inquiry? Do not do self-inquiry. If you are not your life, if you are in fact reality itself, then who cares? Now the fact remains that, as you point out and as you see very clearly, the impulse to look at yourself continues to arise, no matter that the sense that there's something desperately needed continues to diminish. The truth is that what you've always wanted, what we've all always wanted, is to see what we are. So the less sense of desperate need there is, the more constant is the conscious, awake awareness of reality. Do you follow that?
Yeah, I do.
Go on.
Sorry, I was going to say, does that just drop away then, the worry?
You betcha. The worry drops away. Yep, that's what happens, all right. You know, not the practical worries of ordinary life, the practical worries of, well, how am I going to pay the rent or this or that or the other thing. But these things are all transient. They serve a practical purpose. They come and they go. But this underlying worry that I'm missing something and I'm not doing something right, that I need to do something that I'm not doing, that you don't need any of that. You don't need to get rid of it either. All you have to do is look at yourself. You follow me? You still there?
Yes, can you hear me? Sorry.
I can indeed.
Oh, great.
Now.
Yes, sometimes when I look, when it occurs to look, there's, you know, quite a lot of, oh, I'm not looking deep enough, or, you know, just the mind, I guess, it just doesn't shut up. And, but still, it's just to keep looking, right? And
yes, absolutely. And is it not true? You tell me if this isn't true. Even when the mind is going crazy, suspecting that it's not doing it right or that there ought to be something else that's doing better, even in the presence of all of that, are you changed at all? Are you not the same? Are you not here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
And is there anything about all that mental activity that prevents you from seeing that?
I guess not, though at times it does feel very distracting.
Yes, but even with the feeling of distraction, even that doesn't prevent you from, just for a second, looking at what's real, does it?
No.
Yeah, that's right. That's very important to see that, because this is exactly what we, you know, we think that we have to do something about the madness of the monkey mind in order to be free. And the truth is, we need to do nothing whatsoever about the mind. Nothing we've tried to do has worked, and nothing we have failed to do has made anything any worse. All we have to do is rid ourselves of this idea that we are this mind. You follow that? And
yes.
Truth does that.
Yes.
If we need to do something about the chattering of the monkey mind, then we're in deep trouble. Then our suspicions, our worst suspicions, are true, which is that we must fail in this life. So even if it occurs that the mind becomes so seductive that in the midst of your inquiry you are compelled to move back into the mind and its stories and its doubts and fears and enticements and so forth. Even if that happens, so what? It will also happen that there will come a time when it occurs to you to stop for a second and look at what's real. It's the looking at what's real that does the work. And it can't be stopped by anything. It's the looking at reality that does the work. And it takes time. But there's nothing whatsoever that you can do to make the mind get out of the way. And there's nothing whatsoever that the activities of the mind can do to prevent you from seeing what you are. So just look. Just keep looking at reality, at this permanence, at this which never stops, never changes, is never absent. Look and see. Any time you look, there you are. You hear me?
Yeah, I do.
And that's what does the work. It's that does the work, not the quieting of the mind or any of that stuff. It's the looking that does the work.
That's really cool. Thank you.
Okay, it is cool. It's amazing. It's cool when you really hear it and you begin to experience the outcome of it. It's astonishing. It's like, wow. Imagine that. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, great. Thank you so much, John. Thank
You're
you.
You're great. Keep in touch, okay?
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Anybody else?
Okay, we have Travis in San Francisco.
Hi, Travis.
Hi, John.
What can I do for you, my friend?
Well, John, we spoke last time you had a world online satsang, and I was very grateful to get the chance to speak to you, and I am again now. And I just wanted to touch base with you again, thank you again for your offering, say that whatever I can do to help that, I'm more than able to and willing to, and just to give a report that one of the interesting things that's happening for me is that as I go on with this simple looking at the fact that I am actually here, wherever here happens to be, it seems to be catching me by surprise sometimes, like rather than always being something I consciously do. I'll be in the middle of a situation, either difficult or easy or happy or sad or whatever, and I'll just sort of have this knowing come up to me that, you know what, I'm still here, and this is still me doing what's going on, and everything's okay. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's wonderful, and that's to be expected. That's my experience, too, as to what happened, is that in the beginning, it seems like you really have to be purposeful about it, and it's good to continue being purposeful about it, but it is really the case, and everybody should hear this, it is really the case that over time, the awareness of reality just arises and calls to you. And that there is a, and that's because it's what you've always wanted. It really is. And once you get a taste of it, it is to be expected that, once you really know where the water is, it's to be expected that you will automatically turn to that from time to time. And the truth is that finally you see that there is never a time when you are not aware of this reality. In fact, there is not much of anything to you except the awareness of this reality. So I'm really happy to hear that. That's a great confirmation. And I hear that from other people too, which always makes me kind of giggle because it's so much my own experience. Okay?
Yeah, that's great, John. Thank you.
Okay, Travis, you're very welcome.
Now we have Sarah calling from New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand.
Hi, Sarah. It's good to see you here. Are you having trouble with your microphone, Sarah? I can understand that. Well,
hi, John. Can you hear me?
There you are. Yes, I can.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you very well. Thank you. I'm happy to hear you.
Good. Do I have to keep my finger on control?
Well, you can. It's up to you.
Okay. Well, it's wonderful to talk to you. And I just want to follow up. I sent you an email about basically an experience of reality I had. But just to tell you that since then, it's all calmed down. And just to confirm, basically, that it's all so simple, really. Well, that has been my experience of it.
That's a confirming sign. It is simple. And that's what takes us by surprise. And that's what seems to give us so much trouble. Because everything's so simple. And we have persuaded ourselves that everything is so hard. So I'm glad to hear it's simple.
That's good. And I've got all nervous and I can't remember everything I was going to say now. But just to say that the continual looking in is the piece of it, really. That has been my experience, that it's just fulfillment and life is wonderful, really. And although I'm really busy because I've got two small children, I'm not my life anymore. I'm not at stake in my life, and there is no undercurrent of worry. And so life is truly sweet.
Hallelujah. I'm very happy to hear that.
Yes, yeah, indeed. I'm pretty happy too. And just to say thank you so much, because it has been the continual looking in that has eroded it away. And yes. Oh, well, just thank you, and I love you very much.
I love you, too, and I'm very happy to hear this from you. Can you see that it's always been the case?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Anything else?
And the thing is as well, for everybody else to know, I mean, my mind is still active, but what all those thoughts are of no consequence. It doesn't affect what's actually there.
Yes, that's it. It has never affected what's actually here. Yes.
So I hope that is helpful for some people. But
I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's I'm it, sure really? It will be. That's excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for entering my life. And take care, everybody.
Likewise.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, now we have Carly and Vietcom calling from South Carolina.
Well, hello, Carly and Vietcom. How nice to hear from you.
You had mentioned something when you were first talking about missing, a feeling of missing in life. And I have had that feeling all of my life. And it's been a kind of nagging feeling of wanting, yearning, missing something. And that seems to be gone. And that, for me, when you mentioned it, I realized I really don't have that, haven't had that feeling in a long time. And it's quite nice.
I'm very happy to hear that. Yes, it is true. You know, it's we all have. That's universal. The universal human experience is something's missing. And that experience, it's not the experience, that's the interpretation of experience. But that experience arises from the sense that I'm at stake in this life. Because the truth is that if I'm at stake in this life, I'm in trouble. Because this life can't deliver what it seems to promise. And it is wonderful to hear that continuing self-inquiry. And, you know, another thing that's really interesting to hear about this is that, or to reflect on about this, is that these consequences, these outcomes of self-inquiry, often we don't even notice that it's happened until something calls it to our attention. Like we don't even notice that, oh, I haven't felt that for a long time until something calls it to our attention. All we know is that, well, life is easy. Right?
Right. It's something when it was here, it was, I was always aware of it because it was this nagging feeling of having missed or missing, a continual missing. And now that, right now anyway, I can't find it, there's a relaxation and, I don't know, you talk about sweeter, there's a sweetness that is replacing it. There's just no problem. So I thank you for that. And I love you.
You're very welcome, and I love you too. I'm happy to speak with you. I'm happy when we see you guys too. Anything more?
No, just love from becoming on.
Same, likewise. Okay.
Now we have Annie calling from Australia. Can you speak, Annie?
Well, hello, Annie. We'll wait for a little while and see if you resolve whatever technical difficulties are. I'd love to hear your voice. I am very happy with the emails I've gotten from you these last few days. And I'm very happy that you suggested to us that we might move these things to Saturday so the other side of the world could participate in them. I don't know why we didn't see that before. So if you figure out some way to speak, speak. And if not, that's okay too. Annie, maybe we could, maybe you could make arrangements to meet with Carla here some other time and see if you can't work out together the whatever technical problems it is that are afflicting you. I would love to speak with you. So is there anybody else?
We have Vivek calling from Cupertino, California.
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you quite well, Vivek. Good to hear from you.
It's great to speak with you, and I've been listening to your podcast very regularly, and they are quite delightful. My question is, over the course of my life, I've met many people who spoke with great conviction about their experience with God and the idea that if you pray with great faith, then you can have that sort of connection with God, and you should do that. Which I have found difficult to do, whereas self-inquiry seems rather easy. So my question to you is, where does God fit into this?
Well, God, like you, can't fit into anything. Everything else fits into God and you. The yearning for God is a yearning for reality. The yearning for God is a yearning for yourself. And just as all the other methods and practices whereby we seek satisfaction and fulfillment fail, so too does the seeking after God fail. The experience of those who are God intoxicated is a phenomenon of the personality. It comes and goes. That is a consequence of the practices that they take part in. They are very beautiful. They are wondrous and delicious. But the actual yearning for God, that yearning itself, is the same yearning as the yearning for truth, for reality. It is the case that whether you call reality reality or self, or Brahman, or God, it is you. It is this simple, ever-present, underlying, untouchable, unaffectable reality of you. So the yearning for God that seeks to find God in practices that are looking for God outside of yourself, the payoff for them is not the actual finding of reality. The payoff for them is emotional religious experience, which is not to be denigrated. But if you want God, look for what's permanent. Look for what's real. Look for what never is absent. And, of course, that's exactly what you're looking for when you're looking for yourself. Do you follow that?
Yes, thank you. And that is very helpful. I think one of the ways I try to resolve it for myself is to say that even if there is a God outside of me, it's still me. And if I'm going to make any progress in changing that me or understanding that me, I have to first look at that. So even if there is a God or no God, I still have to do self-inquiry.
Yes, that's actually good advice in all endeavors in your life. It doesn't matter what endeavor it is that you're undertaking in your life, whether it's the search for God or the search for enlightenment or the search for wealth and fame and fortune. It remains the case that you cannot be effective unless you find the reality of what you are. That must come first before anything can happen in any other realm. Far first, see what you are. Everybody can hear that. This is excellent advice. Thank you, Vivek.
Thank you, John.
Now we have Nigel calling from Madrid. Nigel?
Hi, John.
Hi, Nigel. How nice to hear you.
It's great to be back. Great to be back. I just thought I'd report in. I just wanted to have a quick word with you and just say how simple and how beautiful and what an incredible joy it is just to have no desires or wants and no lacking of anything.
I'm sorry, Nigel, I missed most of what you said as a result of hitting the wrong button on my mouse. Could you repeat it?
Yes, I'm just sort of really enjoying the lack of desire, the lack of need that used to plague me. It's almost like a feeling that the war is over and there's just what is, you know, and it seems so absurd not to want anything other than just what's taking place now. There's no, even if it's something quite disagreeable, it's just absurd to not want to be there, you know. And I don't know, the practice, the teaching is working. It's just so obvious, so clear, so simple.
Yes, it's amazing. It is the truth. The only thing that calls forth these lives, these phenomenal existences, these personalities, is to provide awareness itself with the instruments whereby all that can be seen and felt and heard and touched and thought can be experienced, good or bad. It is amazing, and it's only a product of the conviction that we are these lives that causes us to reject what we identify as unpleasant and cling to what we identify as pleasant. In the absence of that belief, all that comes is welcome. Why wouldn't it be? And this is, in actual reality, this is the love without condition of which the sages have so much to say. It is the love that cares not upon what its light shines, upon what its light shines. And that's awareness, that's you. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yes, it is. It's extraordinary. It really is. I even had one experience where physical pain turned into love.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is what it always was.
Yes, it's almost, I mean, they're just glimpses, but it's almost as if everything is a manifestation of unconditional love. And it really is just seeing that, and everything changes, and everything stays the same. I've been experiencing a very, how can I say it, a loud stillness. There's just all ever-present stillness. One of the things that I've noticed as well is that I realized that I was looking for silence, or I was looking for peace, or I was looking for not being in a state of suffering, when in actual fact it's just that stillness that's always there. And everything.
Yes, and it's the looking for it that makes us miss it.
Exactly.
It's saying, what I want is stillness, what I want is silence, what I want is peace. And of course, since I want it, these things cannot be already here, otherwise I wouldn't want them. So
exactly,
we just automatically reject what's ever presently here, because if that was it, I wouldn't want them. Until finally, the idea occurs to us, or it's brought to us, or something, that what I really want to see is the truth, is reality. And reality is not something about which we can project an idea onto it. Reality is what's here. It's me.
It's all there is.
And then we see. Right?
Okay, John, well, it's great talking to you again. I'll love and leave you. Keep up the great work you're doing, because you really are affecting so many people. It's so wonderful being here with all these people. I feel so closely related to them all, really. It's wonderful. So,
isn't it amazing to see all these people here?
It's wonderful. And so many people where, I don't know, they're asking the questions I ask and they're feeling the things I feel. I feel so closely related, I really do. It's a nice family you've got coming together here. Okay, John, all the best.
Oh, thank you, Nigel. Be well.
Thanks to you, John.
Bye. Okay, my friends, this is it. It's time for us to wrap this up. It breaks my heart to leave you. It's a great gift to me that you are here with me, willing to see what's real, willing to see the truth. A couple of things I wanted to say. It looks like putting the password on the server was effective in keeping the riffraff out. I wish they had stayed long enough to hear what we are about here, but if they go to the website, they can come back again. So I'm also very happy to see that putting the password on the server didn't seem to impose an unreasonable difficulty on everybody, because you're all here. Also, I'm happy that, you know, the business about sending me text messages during these meetings, I discovered that it just was too distracting to try to pay attention to the text messages and pay attention to you, which is what I'm here to do, is to pay attention to you. So I am grateful and I thank you for allowing me that little favor if you have something that you want me to speak about and you don't have a microphone, email me at the address online@riverganga.org and I will read your email on the air and discuss it at the next satsang. If you just want to talk to me, I mean just want to write to me at johnsherman.org. I am tickled pink to hear from you. I get hundreds of emails, and I read every one of them, and I am not so good at replying as I am at reading, but if it seems that I need to say something to you, I will reply. It may not be right away, but I will reply. So keep writing to me. It's a great gift to me to hear from you like that. Lastly, please stick around for just a short time after I leave because Carla has some things she needs to say to you. So just stay briefly and hear what Carla has to say, if you would be so kind. Other than that, there is no lie, no experience, no affliction, no good thing or bad thing ever that has touched you. You are permanent, eternal reality of awareness itself. You are not your life. It is a lie that you are your life. And this lie, as you can hear from the reports of people who have spoken to me today, and you can even read on our website beautiful letters of confirmation from people who have been doing this work for some time. The lie cannot stand up to the truth. And the truth is ever present. It is absolutely, totally available to you. It takes no merit, no training, no understanding, nothing other than the willingness to just in this moment stop just for a second and look to see if it is not true that you are absolutely, certainly, permanently present. Just look at that. just for a second, every chance you get, and everything will turn out right. Thank you from my heart for your attention and your time. I love you all, and I will see you here and everywhere whenever I can. Thank you for this satsang. May all being know itself. Om Shanti. Good evening.